What's going on, everyone? Welcome to another episode of Conspiracy or Just a Coincidence. I am Jack Allen. First, go follow me on all the socials at Kojak Podcast on Instagram and Twitter. And if you want to support the show, Patreon, Venmo, all that stuff. And that's it. I'm doing a short intro today. But today's episode that you're about to hopefully be listening to, I have on the Loyalist at the Loyalist Six. And if you can tell by his name, he is a monarchist. And I told you guys how I flirt with this idea of maybe monarchy being the best form of government that provides the people with the most protection. And I'm still floating around, dude. I don't know if I'll ever have a definite answer. So I always respect when people are very sold on their beliefs. Like the Loyalists. So we talk about monarchies, we talk about Imperial Russia, we talk about Napoleon, all these powerful governments or empires of the time and why they were successful. So it's a shorter show than we normally have, but a great episode. So go if you're interested in hearing more about monarchies and that form of government and what that looks like, definitely go check out his stuff. He's on YouTube, and his Twitter, again, is at Loyalist6. So you can go find him there. And that's it, guys. So I'm Jack Allen with Conspiracy or Just a Coincidence. Thanks for listening. Tomorrow's show, if you're listening to this right now, I've got all the Mount Rushmore of We've Read the Documents, Billy Ray Valentine, and Odd Man. And so I'll hope to see you guys there tomorrow live at 8:30 p.m. Eastern on the YouTube channel. And that's it. All right, guys. Thanks. Take care. Have a good night. And we'll see you tomorrow. Peace. What is going on, everyone? Welcome to another episode of Conspiracy or Just a Coincidence. I am Jack Allen. So today's show, I am very excited. As many of you guys have heard, I dabble in the monarchy world of thinking that's possibly the best solution to our issues. So I brought on a guy that's going to help explain my beliefs and maybe more why monarchy is the best form of government. So I welcome the Loyalist. Loyalist, thank you, dude, for being on the show. And how are you doing today, buddy?
I'm doing pretty good. I'm the Loyalist. I run the Star Spangled Kingdom YouTube channel. I do a, I guess you would say, I call it a live show every week, 5 p.m. EST, where we talk about monarchy. Last week we had the great repeal the 20th century, and we talked about the differences and where we could find agreements about between Hoppe and libertarianism, other forms of libertarianism, and how that relates to monarchy. We talked about orthodoxy. I dissed at Mama the week before that. Before that, I had a guy named Lavender. He's like a Bulgarian monarchist, but I'm going to stop talking about my last four shows.
Well, so this is, I wanted you on because, so I'm like obviously more in the conspiracy world than like the libertarian and liberty world, but I read this book, Freemasons Behind the Revolution, and I think Banker, it was like a, and so this book was, I read it probably like a year ago, and the whole point was how the Freemasons and these bankers, they systematically overthrew each monarchy of Europe. They're behind the French Revolution, they're behind the Bolshevik, and on and on and on. And well, so this book. So this brought me to this point. I was thinking, well, if this was their goal, was to overthrow these monarchies, why is that? Is possibly monarchy and a strong church the best form of government that protects the people? And so that's brought me to this thinking, and that's why I'm interested to have you on and explaining monarchy and what that means. And yeah, so I just wanted to give that a little backstory. And then sorry for now it's all you.
Yeah, I don't know if I ever read that book. I did have a conversation with a friend of mine I'm going to have on the show this week, who is what's a nice way of saying this? Let's just say he believes in nationalism and he's economically left wing, and let's leave it at that.
Gotcha. But we talked more.
We talked a lot about this because there was actually during the French Revolution, this group, it's not exactly the Freemasons, but the precursor to the Freemasons, the Rosicrucians. And basically, those actually, I think Queen Anne, not Queen Anne. Oh, I always forget the French. I'm the worst monarchist when it comes to royal names.
There's a lot.
Let them eat cake.
Oh, Marie Antoinette.
Marie Antoinette, she was not a bad monk. She was a very devout Catholic. And one of the things she started corresponding with in her letters was talking about the Rosicrucians, because, again, the true Catholics really have a problem with Freemasonry. Same thing with Orthodox Christians, Protestants, like actual Protestants who really don't like Freemasons. And the reason you see a lot of these Freemasonic groups overthrowing the monarchy is because, in the end of the day, Freemasonry is Satanism. That's really all it is. It's Satanism masquerading as this weirdo form of Gnosticism. It's really just completely and utterly insane. And the reason they want to overthrow monarchies is a simple fact of the matter is when you have a strong Christian monarch, it is impossible to spread degeneracy, undermine the country, take over corporations and spread these things. If you look at a lot of the institutions under most of the people say, oh, these monarchs were terrible, but it's not actually true. Like the royal families for the longest time didn't change. And that's kind of one of the main reasons to be a monarch is just plainly stability. I mean, France after the French Revolution went through two empires. It's on its, I think, third republic. And there was 900 years before that. There was some invasions, of course, but France existed as a coherent entity for over 900 years under the house of, the descendants of the house of, it's the same direct descendants of the same group of people, but it's the Varangians and then the Bourbons is how that goes. But yeah, and mainly stability is the main reason. And it's a Christian moral institution. And then that's the whole thing is that when we talk about the divine right of kings, we don't necessarily say that the king is above the law or the laws of God or nature. Gene Bowden makes this very clear in his book, Six Books of the Commonwealth, that even an absolutist is not above even an absolute monarch cannot put himself above the laws of God and nature. But in democracy, you will see pretty much the opposite. Like, these people put themselves above God. They put themselves against the laws of nature. They believe that you can change your gender or have this country of incoherent worldviews of people who have nothing in common, who just have nothing holding it together. I mean, that's where you ultimately get where democracy leads. It's not to say that America itself was a bad idea. The original Americans, like the one of the original revolutionary Americans, I mean, all of them actually, originally, they didn't want the Republic. The Republic came later. The idea came later. Originally, they wanted King George III to rule directly over the United States. It was actually they wanted more power to the monarch and less power to the illegitimate parliament put under by a psychotic dictator, Oliver Cromwell, who was a terrible person, and people who defend the guy are crazy. And that's the whole thing. It's like, it's not a psychotic thing to say America should be a monarchy, because America on three separate occasions tried to establish a monarchy. It's like the most normal thing. There was the Decemberist plot. There was the original thing where they tried to put King George over directly over the Americas. And there was also George Washington asking to be king. It's not like... What I advocate for is what I would call, and I describe myself, this three... Sorry if I'm talking really quickly. I tend to do that.
You're doing great, dude. Doing great.
Yeah, sorry. I don't mean to dominate the conversation.
I want you to dominate. Loyalists, keep going, dude. I'm already learned. I judge on how I learn. I already learned tons. So keep going. Keep talking, dude. I'm loving it.
Well, okay. So those three main philosophies, schools of thought of a monarchy. There's the ceremonialist, which basically the monarch serves more as a figure in cultural ed. those people can be ignored because they're not real monarchists, and they're basically just they like the idea and the pageantry of monarchy, but they don't like the idea of actual sovereignty. The king has no sovereignty in that role because he can't declare war in peace, he can't make laws, and he can't make laws binding on all subjects. And then there's two other camps, broadly the same, we call constitutional monarchs. Constitutional monarchs, and a good example like of this in practice would be like current day England is a good example of a constitutional monarchy. The queen has a large amount of power. She really does. Like the Queen of England, if she wanted tomorrow, could dissolve parliament. And she could also declare war. She can also fire the entire parliament of most of the Commonwealth nations. The queen has a lot of power, and so do a lot of European monarchs. They just refuse to wield it for the good of the nation because they've convinced themselves to, and in my opinion, they're being held hostage by the liberal world that they don't have a right to just say, enough with this nonsense. I mean, Elizabeth II actually said when gay marriage was being passed in the UK, it's like, I can't morally agree with this. But she signed it anyways, basically, because if she really should have just said, nope, and put it in the shredder and said, nope, not doing that. But that gets to the third. Well, this is technically a semi-constitutionism. You could either say semi-constitutionalism or semi-absolutism. It basically, semi-constitutionalist is what you would call the, We in monarchist circles, we also call it the German model of monarchy, where not only does they have the power to dissolve parliament, they can just straight up ignore parliament if they so choose. And a certain amount of, you need a large majority to even mess with the monarch. Kaiser Wilhelm II really liked doing this to parliament during World War One, and he's like, I'm just going to ignore you. And that's kind of why they stabbed it. Basically, all of them stabbed him in the back. And that's the real truth of the matter, is that Wilhelm was stabbed in the back by the government. And the war effort really was stabbed in the back. Like, these aren't false claims by the Germans. They really were stabbed in the back by the so-called people who wanted to establish a republic. They stabbed their nation in the back. And the last form of monarchy really is what I believe in, which is absolutism, which is a misnomer, because absolutism or absolute monarchy does not make the monarch ruler of all things and can do whatever he wants. Like, a monarch who's an absolutist can still be charged with murder or any actual crime. I mean, he could judge himself, but most people would find that illegitimate. He can't put himself against above the laws of God and nature. You're talking about Bolshevik Russia. That's the same thing that happened in Russia. The Bolsheviks the monarch was overthrown by Republicans and Democrats, and they overthrew the monarch, and they stabbed Russia in the back during war.
Absolutely.
And then Bolsheviks, then the Democrats had an election, the Bolsheviks lost, and they said, we won. And that's the whole thing, is if you see the history of overthrowing monarchs or overthrowing like great men, it's always, Gene Bone pointed this out, is that people who claim to care about the downtrodden, the poor, the masses. And he said, caring about these things and caring for these people is a noble goal, which it very much is. I think caring for the poor, helping out the homeless is a noble Christian moral effort. But he said, most people who proclaim this against the sovereign really only want power for themselves. And that's where you see people who became the monarch is a tyrant and all these things.
Well, I had a guy on a few weeks ago, and he's like a communist or whatever, and he was trashing on the Romanovs and the Czars. And then I told him, I said, well, I think you're like a little, because under Imperial Russia, they produced the most wheat They had the highest standard of living. They made more roads. They shipped more tonnage than England. They were the world's breadbasket. I think they produced like 52% of the world's wheat. I mean, Imperial Russia dominated. There was even like a quote from who was ever president at the time and said like, wow, they have the most honest judicial system of the world. They, you know, made illegal child labor, all these things. So there's like this thinking, or maybe it's like a narrative pushed out that under a monarchy, you are not free. And I think that that's this really huge misconception among us. Like, go ahead.
That's the thing is, under King George III, we were paying less taxes
than
we are now.
Oh, like, way less.
It was like the amount of taxes, like a lot of the monarchs levied, unless they were at war, were very small. And
yeah,
this thing is like, you know what would never happen to you in Imperial Russia? No one would ever try and make your kid brainwash your children into turning them into homosexuals. I mean, the same reason, like the people's like, well, you know, Nicholas II was a bad monarch. It's like, under his rule, the Trans-Siberian Railroad was started under, I think, his father, Peter III, and it was completed under him. That made Russia insanely wealthy, and the average Russian, that connected all of Rus. Well, Russia, Rus. And that connected them. And do you know what Stalin built? He built a shitty canal, couldn't hold big ships, and it was a complete waste of effort. It killed millions of people building this thing.
Well, dude, their oil production crashed under, like, everything that they had created, the Tsar, the Imperial Russia built, was destroyed in years. It took, you know, in months, it was all gone.
Well, it took till the 1940s for the Russian economy to start picking up. And that wasn't because of Stalin's great reforms. I mean, Stalin himself was a lot less socially liberal than Lenin was.
Yeah.
But all of this, if you look at the Russian economy under Nicholas II, it was already going up. Money deposited in the bank was going up. The average standard of living of Russia was already going up before the Bolshevik Revolution. Yes. These whole myth that they were all terrible people and they massacred people in the streets. The people they shot were communists. The people who would later kill them and their family. Nicholas II, and the reason Nicholas II entered World War I was not because of any grand things he wanted out of Europe. He wanted the thing that every czar promised to the insanely orthodox Russian populace, is I will retake back the most sacred city in orthodoxy, Constantinople, and rid it of remove the spires from the Hagia Sophia, and liturgy will be celebrated once again. That's what Nicholas II, almost without the Bolshevik backstabbers, would have gotten. And without them, he would have been praised as Nicholas the Great, liberator of Constantinople, liberator of most of the lands occupied under Muslim occupation. And that's the whole thing, is we see the United States, and I think Curtis Yarvin, I disagree with some of what Yarvin says, but he says a very good point. It feels like, you know, if the left is like, we really already live under communism, not to an extent, but the forces that rule us are inherently communistic. In the Republican Party, we have neocons who are descendants of Trotskyites. Like, the neoconservative movement is a Trotskyite movement. And on the Democratic Party side, we have descendants of Michel Foucault, the guy who wrote the author of Rules for Radicals. He was friends with the Clintons, Saul Alinsky. Like, they were friends with the Clintons. They were friends with every single one. We have like the Weatherman Underground, Bill Ayers. He was friends with Obama. Like, Obama, you know, as much as people like to rag on the Tea Party, but they're accurate. Obama is a communist.
Yeah.
Like, he believes, he literally was friends with a communist terrorist. And, you know, all these communist terrorists, and this is the thing that the right needs to learn, is don't apologize for the most radical elements of your movement. Say, just say, I don't care. Because you think the left ever apologized for the Weathermen Underground? No, they didn't. They pardoned them. So anybody doing anything radical on the right, the next president who is a Republican say, I'm just pardoning them. Sorry, pardon, 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 pardon. Oh, you did that? Pardon. Yeah. And that's the whole thing.
Well, what's so... So do you agree with it that it was a systematic approach that they wanted to dismantle these monarchical families? Do you think that's like an accurate statement?
It is an accurate statement. I mean, I don't think the American Revolution wanted to dismantle monarchy. The founders were very intent that saying, this is strictly an American thing. We don't want anybody else to use this system. This is a system created specifically in the founders' eyes for an Anglo-Saxon,
right,
God-fearing moral people.
Right.
We don't want anybody else to use this system. I mean, yes. Thomas Jefferson said, do not attempt to spread liberty beyond these shores. And look what happened when America decided to stop being isolationist. We expanded the franchise where it shouldn't be.
The reason we expanding the franchise. That's hilarious.
Well, that's the whole thing. After World War One, basically, we had all these veterans saying, you owe us all these bonuses, or we're not going to pay it. Here, you can have the right to vote. That's like now we just they threatened to overthrow the government because the United States, because Woodrow Wilson basically used the American people as mercenaries for basically a pointless war in Europe that we had nothing to do with.
Right. Which was created by Britain anyway. So,
well, it's not even created by Britain. Like World War, I don't know. I really should talk more on my show about World War One. World War One destroyed most of the monarchies of Europe, and specifically, yes, through Woodrow Wilson. Like, you know, it's funny, you know, every political side hates Woodrow Wilson. He was an awful president. Like, Wilson created the Federal Reserve, destroyed monarchies, just an awful president. You know, if anybody should be tearing statues down, it's Woodrow Wilson. And yeah, don't get me started.
Well, so I know, so there's this great, if you like World War I, have you ever read The Hidden History of World War One? Let me just get the...
No, I've never read that.
Oh, it's, you'll love it, dude. I'll send you it's called Hidden History, The Secret Origins of the First World War. But I did it like a long time ago. But basically their point was that Britain and where they dominated for so long. And now Germany, they're killing it with technology economically. And so from 1880, they're keep poking them with the stick, like the Boer War. They try to do something they keep trying to get Germany to start a war. And they know they need to pull Russia in to help break down Russia. And basically that was their theory.
That's
the
whole thing is one of the czars told, I forget which czar told him, don't break the alliance with Germany.
Yeah.
Russia should have never been friends with Germany. And honestly, the British Empire, which I am a massive Anglophile, after Napoleonic War, it was not British. It was not ruled by Anglo-Saxons. It was taken over by the Rothschild banking dynasty. That's who ruled Britain. Britain, and if you want to go even further, the Magna Carta stripped the Anglo ruling family of the rights to rule Britain. So the thing is with this whole World War One thing, if you really want another good book on the subject, a friend of mine who does a lot of Godsmint's Un, I forget what he is on BitChute, but he has a lot of videos on talking about the Bolsheviks' ties to international finance.
Yeah.
And the main reason they hated Russia, it's because of the Trans-Siberian Railroad, which was a competitive route to what they controlled, which was the Suez Canal. That was a competitive route. That's a main route. Yeah, and the whole thing with the with like just Russia in general. I mean, Russia still has not gotten recovered ever. It's still never recovered from the Soviet stuff. Like, it's people like to say, oh, it's super trade. It's not. Russia has a massive abortion problem, alcoholism, largest producer. Like, Russia, this is a sick thing, but like child pornography is mainly produced in Russia. It has just become a sick, depraved place after the fall of the Soviet Union. So basically, after the fall of the Soviet Union, really what happened was the oligarchs took control. And all the oligarchs are the former heads of the Communist Party. That is the former communist bigwig. That's who runs Russia now.
I didn't know that.
Like people like to say, it's super trade. And I was like, no. If it was traditional Russia, people like Putin wouldn't be in power because he'd be a former member of the KGB, and he would have been. If it was truly Russia, the czars would have retaken power and purged every single former member of the KGB, the Communist Party, in the same style. They would have been probably a lot more humane. They would have been given fair trials and then hanged for treason. I always say that. I don't believe in Stalinist-style purges or show trials. Right. They should be given fair trials, and then they should be executed for treason. But I'm going to stop talking about
Russia. Dude, you're doing perfect. So I want – this is another – so this is – I thought it would be a good question. We were talking – you're an Anglophile, so this will be a perfect question for you. So when I was reading – I'm sure you know all about how William of Orange, he gets funded by international bankers to overthrow his father-in-law, and then he signs that Tonnage Bill Act, and I think that's in like the late 1600s, and in that Tonnage Act it gives the Bank of England its charter. And so I was thinking, like, it is there, because I don't like the current, like the Mountbatten, the Windsor family, so I was wondering if your take, if at some point, like in 1690 when William of Orange overthrew, I forget which what that king's name was in Britain, and that was when everything changed. That ruined, that put it, the usury banking system back in England.
Well, I always forget what dynasty, because I think one of them during the War of the Roses, the two true heirs to the British throne are murdered. I really need to read a bit more up on the War of the Roses, but it's a very interesting. Yeah, but it's 100% accurate that anytime a centralized bank happens, it always and they're back a foreign monarch, it's always to undermine the monarch. Good book on it is the history of centralized banking.
Yes, I already did that on this show. Yeah,
that is a great book. Rothbard people have recommended that I read a lot more on Rothbard. Great. I disagree with his solutions, but I do really like Rothbard's opinions on, I've read one of his books. The only book I've really read of Rothbard's, I've read some of his articles, which was Man, Economy, and the State, which I disagree with the premise and the overall message of Man, Economy, and State, but he makes some good, I think the libertarians make some good points about time preference. Like, that's another reason monarchs are better leaders, because a monarch has a low time preference. It's confusing. I finally got it down. Low time preference means you long-term planning. High time preference means you're impulsive. So a monarch will always plan that his son is going to take his throne. So a monarch will have, like, a president will have a 4-year plan. A monarch will have a 100-year plan. Right. And you can see this in a lot of the projects that were completed under monarchs, great cathedrals. There's cathedrals that were not even completed until several generations. Yes. What's that cathedral in France that just burnt down? I'm sorry. The Catholics are going to hate me. Hate me for that. But that was a monarch who built that. And if you see every megalithic structure that we see, it's like, oh, that's beautiful. Who built that? It's like, Charles something, he built that. The U.S. builds beautiful buildings, but only during the time period when we had what I call an aristocratic republic, is in where only a small amount of people had the right to vote. That's we weren't founded as a democracy. We were founded as basically an aristocracy. Is that you had to own land, you had to be a male, you had to be an Anglo-Saxon. Well, white. They expand the term of what they mean.
Right.
It's like when people say, what is white? It's like, it's just an easier way of saying European. It's just like, we don't say if it's, and you had to be all of these things to vote in the election. And if you see all of the stuff we pass during this time period, it's all perfectly sensible. It's normal. It's functioning. And like, it's not until we start expanding the franchise that we get these crazy spending bills, these crazy deficits, these just insane things that never work. I mean, the only real things that we've done that have been productive and have been the Interstate Highway Project, the Transcontinental Railroad. But like, when was the last big infrastructure project? I don't think
we're crumbling. Our is beyond, because no, and I think that I don't know if I told you this, but I started reading Hoppe's book,
Democracy is the
I stopped reading it, but regardless, the point still stays. It was like how these politicians, they want to take, kind of how you were saying earlier, they want to take as much as they can out in that short time that they're in power. They want to extract all the wealth they can for themselves. So fixing bridges isn't something that some politician is going to win on, right? Like that's not glamorous. So no one does it. And that's why our infrastructure is.
Well, you see, crumble. Like you see the aqueducts. Oh, wait, no, that was built under the Caesars. Wasn't built under the Republic.
Right.
None of Rome's great projects were built under the Republic. Point. You know, Caesar was right to crush them. You know, and that's the thing, is that when people during the whole, let's just say, election fiasco, people's like, you know, Trump just sees absolute power. We're behind you. But he wouldn't, because in all honesty, Trump's kind of he's just a boomer. He had like good instincts, but he thinks, and I've said a lot of things. I didn't vote for the guy either time. And I'll say that. It's like, I don't vote because I don't think it. I mean, you can change things on the local level. So I vote in local politics.
Mm-hmm.
But like Trump, they projected what they wanted onto him. They wanted, like, they got like this guy who legitimately believes that the system works as intended. I think it's fundamentally, if we look at what Trump like says, he fundamentally thinks that the system works how it should work.
Mm.
I don't think he, I mean, I've said he's kind of like a, I mean, I think he did kind of steal his platform, but fundamentally, I don't think Trump's a bad person. Like, and we like everyone on the right, they wanted Julius Caesar, but they got, he was like a guy who tried to reform the Senate, and they got him. They wanted Caesar, but they got the guy trying to reform the Roman Senate. They're like, come on, guys, let's try and make this work.
Just vote harder. We're going to get it. We're going to get it if we all vote together.
Yeah. And that's the thing, is that people don't realize, and how do I say this without sounding like a federal agent? This fundamental system in the United States as a nation is not morally corrupt, but the fundamental government of the United States is corrupt, and the government itself and its institutions needs to be destroyed and rebuilt from the ground up. Like, if fundamentally you cannot, no one is really like, it's like the one guy standing at his sentry after the Jap, I think, no, he was a soldier during the Japanese war, and this guy fought for until like the 90s.
Yeah.
And he's like, what do you mean the war ended?
Right. Yes.
And that's the people trying to defend the constitutional republic. You're like, you're the people. The war is done. You're not saving the republic.
Great.
The republic has been dead. Like, the real and last hope to save the republic, there was two. There was this guy. He was a. Basically, probably the last gasp of the Dixiecrats who ran in 72, Wallace. Basically, you know, he was kind of I don't repeal this. Repeal the Civil Rights Act. It's been a disaster. He was the governor of Mississippi.
George Wallace?
Yeah, George Wallace. We need Wallace. He had the best campaign. He's like, I can get behind a guy whose campaign songs are all set to like 90s rockabilly and like 90s folk songs. I can get behind George Wallace.
Well, so that's like another, like the voting, like when our founding fathers, this republic, kind of like you said earlier, it was made for people that were God-fearing, Christian. And the voting rules were there for a place because that made, if you own land, you're paying taxes. Well, now through this like a woketopia and pushing like, oh, everyone deserves a vote. Well, no, because if you survive off government, off my tax dollars, whether you're a teacher or a police officer or welfare, you survive off wealth. Why should your vote equal my vote? You're going to vote in your best interest. So this
you vote like people who are overwhelmingly on welfare. And, you know, this is the whole thing I tell people. It's like, you know, I think it was there was an anarcho-capitalist who talked about this. There was also a bunch of other people on the right. It's like, is take advantage of the system. And people say like, oh, you can't like just take advantage of the welfare system if you're on the right. It's like, no. Is that, no, we're not saying commit fraud. We're simply saying if you can get something or tax write-offs or any of these things, just take the system for a ride. Because the best way to deal with the U.S. right now is to bleed it dry. Because you as a white man and me as a white man, we pay taxes, and like the people who pay into the tax system are, if you look at per capita, are Asians and whites. Those are the only people paying positively into the tax system. And if you break it down even more, it's mainly men. Those who are paying into the tax system positively, it feels like it's hateful to bring them in. It's like, no, there's such a thing as parasitism, and that's what the system is. It is literally stealing from the productive members of society to increase the parasites of society. And people's like, oh, you're saying people on welfare are parasites? Like, if you live three generations perpetually on welfare, your ass should have been thrown out into the streets. And you know, people's like, that's cruel. I'm like, why? You are adding nothing of value. You are doing nothing. Like, I'm a carpenter. I get up at 6 a.m. every day. Sometimes in 90-degree weather. I'm a full-time college student. I find time to do a podcast, and people can't find a time in the fucking days to get off their ass after sitting around all day being in a government-paid house and to find a fucking job. And another thing about these systems is, because I've had friends who are on welfare, this is why I don't judge people harshly, they're designed specifically to make poverty, to make trying to get out of poverty as hard as humanly possible. They are designed, like, if you look at other countries' social welfare programs, and I'm not against, I like to say I support a hand up, as in jobs programs and training programs, not a handout. I think if you have any social welfare programs, there has to be a work component. You have to be getting job training. But if you look at other countries that have successful, like more successful welfare states, they basically require you to work. They require you to try and find a job. They train you. And the U.S., because it the systems were designed to destroy the family, they basically incentivize poverty. Yeah. It's a perverse incentive. It's disgusting. If you really look at it, it's quite disgusting. And that's where we've gotten when we move away from expanding the electorate. You can't do that. And it's not even that. It's that Gene Bowden points this out, is that if you have a group of people who are not franchised in your country and you're a democracy, you eventually will always franchise them. He said that, and he was proven right. And he basically used to make fun of the socialists of his time. And he was writing in the late 1500s. And it's quite revealing that if you look at what he writes and you apply it to what is now happening, and he didn't even say that monarchy is the perfect system. That's not even a claim monarchists make. It's that it just functions better. He said, these are the flaws in aristocracy. This is the flaws. And back then it was called popular states. It wasn't called democracy. It was called popular states. Like I do like reading the book because it uses a lot of 16th century terminology. It's like the Mohammedans and the Muscovites. And I'm like, it's just like some of the things he writes about, like people's mentalities of like how Russians act. I'm like, this is so inaccurate, but this is just like basically racial stereotypes were considered a key part of writing books about political science back in the 1600s. You're like, is this guy ever been to Russia? I was like, I don't think he ever stepped foot out. He traveled mostly in like Western Europe.
Damn it, dude, I just had a great question. The question I wanted to ask you all show, and now it slipped my mind about, oh my God. Jeez. Well, I guess so. Like, how could you? Oh, this is what I wanted to ask you. So, the religion aspect, oh my gosh, dude, I keep just give me 1 second.
What's my religion?
Now I got it. Phew, thank goodness. This is the big, because I saw you were an Orthodox Christian. So I talk about monarchy a lot, and I brought it up in my one buddy who I love. He's amazing. He's not an Orthodox, but he's a big Christian. So he used to agree with me on monarchy, and then he said it was like biblical, and I agreed with that. And at one point he changed his mind and he said that in the Bible, and you're going to know I'm not a good biblical scholar, but I guess like maybe it was King Solomon where they wanted to have a king like the pagans did. And God said, oh, you don't need a king.
The book of the Judges, it's Christian anarchy.
Elaborate on this and why that is.
Well, I'm not really that good on biblical scholars, but they basically say that the judges said that and said God said you couldn't have a king like the pagans. It's just really a misunderstanding of that. It really is. I really couldn't give you a very good explanation of it because, I mean, I'm sure like people like Jay Dyer could probably give you a better explanation, but he blocked me for disagreeing with him on Ukraine. So, you know,
I would ask you anyway before him. Don't worry, Lil. Well, so the reason I brought that up was I didn't know if you had any, like, what would you say to refute that? Because I don't know. Like, I looked up that story and I saw that, but then God gave kings for the rest of human history. So that really true?
This thing is, God is not opposed to the concept of kingship. I mean, that's early Christianity. But God said to Caesar, and he said, through this symbol you will conquer. And he saw a cross. And God came down to several kings and say, drive out the heathens. So are we to assume that these men are not talking to God? Because they were victorious. God is on the side, is always been on the side of monarchy. God sent that to Constantine. Yeah, sent that to Constantine. He said, through the symbol you will conquer. He didn't say, remove yourself from being Caesar. He said, through the symbol you will conquer. That's what God's commandment vision was to Constantine. Through the symbol you will conquer. And God, when God reveals himself to plenty of saints, they say, well, some reveal, says this is more like the thing of like the issue. I'm not anti-Protestant. America is a Protestant country. I don't say it's not, and there's been plenty of great Protestant monarchs, but that's the real issue with Protestantism. I really see is that you kind of just take the Bible and interpret it any way you like. So it's the issue. That's the joke. It's like, what 10,000 Protestant denominations do you belong to? But yeah, God, like, and I don't think, and I don't think that, necessarily, that you can't be Christian and believe in republicanism. But I am 100% against all Christian anarchists. Screw those people. Like,
so last question, why is liberty, like, what would be your refute or rebuttal to why anarchy doesn't work, or why monarchy is a better form than, you know, a anarcho-capitalist or a libertarian type of government?
Well, the simple thing is just how power works. Is like, the people who want, like, for anarchy to work is, I like to call, when I consider ideologies, I came up this when I became a monarchist, I call it the a-hole factor. Find the most obnoxious a-hole you could think of in your life and see if your political system could deal with it. How is anarcho-capitalism just going to deal with it? How is anarcho-capitalism going to deal with a guy who just buys up all the land around someone's property and then just starts blaring, like, hardcore, like, disgusting pornography? This is not a violation of the NAP. You could basically, in that system, be the biggest psychopath, and as long as you're not violating the NAP, which, to be fair, Rothbard said you couldn't enforce morality upon people. He later clarifies what he means by that, but it just comes to this system where you're like, well, is that a violation of the NAP? Maybe. Well, as long as they're not harming themselves. And this is the thing they like to say with, like, this is my thing with drug use. Drug abuse does not just harm you. Like, you're harming your family, you're harming society, everyone has to take care of you. So a drug addict, because there's no way of getting from point A to point B in anarcho-capitalism without violating the basic premises of anarcho-capitalism. Fair. It's a self-defeating ideology.
Fair.
And, like, a libertarian style government, like, limited, like, small government, like, small L libertarians, as they like call themselves.
Yeah.
Government, like, the reason the left has taken over every institution is because they want power. That's it. They just want power. They don't give two shits about abusing people. They say, we are going to have power. We're going to do anything we can to take power. And we are going to crush anybody who gets in our way. Where libertarians say, I just want to be left alone.
Yeah.
Like, and libertarians should flock to monarchy. Because this is one of my favorite lines. I forget who exactly said it. And one of my monarchist friends, like, the king doesn't care how long your lawn is. The king doesn't care if you're sawing off the end rifle of a shotgun. The king won't murder your children in your sleep for violating gun laws. There was very little gun restriction under... There were some monarchs who passed some arms restrictions, but most... Like, you could own your own, like, galleons with cannons on it.
Right.
And you could be a privateer. You could basically be a legalized pirate.
Yes. Well, that happened. So yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Like, you could, like, most people carried guns in, like, the Spanish colonies. Like, people were heavily armed.
Yeah.
You could own anything. That you could basically own whatever you want. You could own cannons.
You had a pirate ship with cannons. You were robbing a rival country's
Navy.
Ships, and that was signed off by the king. So you're right. If you love gun, you know, this would be
Dude,
my last question, because I, you know, I got one other. So Napoleon, good guy or bad guy?
No, trash. Absolutely.
What? That's gonna be the first thing we disagree on. He's bad.
Napoleon was a Freemason.
His brother was.
He spread liberalism out all across Europe. He was just generally not a good leader. Like, ooh. Really, if you
How
want,
about, he kicked out. You read History of Central Banking, right?
Yeah, but that's the thing is, he did that later after that. And really, if you want a better version of Napoleon, like, the Second French Empire was much more Catholic and much more reactionary. Like, the Second French Empire that seceded Napoleon was much better. Napoleon himself was no. Like, it's really a myth that Napoleon was essentially a liberal. Essentially,
I don't know, dude.
Like, if you look at a lot of Napoleonic code, it's very liberal. It is not something I think is a good thing. I don't think Napoleon was good for Europe.
Really? Well, why did the Rothschilds poison him? If he was a bad leader,
they were backing both sides of that war. They backed Napoleon and they backed the Europe. They were just in it for themselves. They just were in it for power. And Napoleon took the money. The whole thing was just a setup to like.
Oh, agreed.
It was completely. Napoleon was a dupe for centralized banking. And that's the whole thing is when you back both sides of a war, most of the time you always win.
True.
Like, if you look at the people, look at a war profiteers before the U.S. got involved in World War II. They were arming the British. They were arming the Nazis. They were arming the Soviets.
Yes.
If you want the people who helped found the Cato Institute, the Koch brothers' father. You know how the Koch brothers made their money originally?
Oh, how did they?
Oh, they were building refineries for the Nazis, Soviets. They didn't care.
Oh, yeah.
That's the whole thing. Is play all sides is basically the philosophy of international capital.
And I agree.
And that's the whole thing. And that's one of my favorite points about monarchy. Is a monarch's power is directly correlated to the territory they control. Their power is based off something tangible. Like, they are only wealthy and powerful because they control this nation. And they, like, where an international financier or someone like Jeff Bezos has no ties to anything. I mean, Stalin is correct. I mean, when he calls people like this ruthless cosmopolitans. But every ideology is called these people something else. The cabal, whatever you want to call them. I like the term international Satanists or international financiers.
Dude, but we got to do a longer show next time, and I'll have a better list of what I wanted to talk about. We'll have some nice chats about Napoleon and a few other things. But where can everyone find you, Loyalist, and learn more about what you work on and all those good things?
You can find me at Twitter at the Loyalist, YouTube Star Spangled Kingdom, BitChute the Loyalist. I don't really like posting on Telegram, but I'm on there. Gab at the Loyalist. Gab is because Gab doesn't have censorious stuff.
Yes.
If you kind of get offended about some of the stuff I share on Gab, I don't give a fuck. So you know,
I love
post
it,
what I want.
Well, I'll put all the links. Oh yeah, continue if you got more links. Sorry.
Let's see. Twitter. You can follow my co-host. He's a blogger at godkingandnation.blog. Same thing on Gab, Telegram. Thanks for having me on, Jack. I really hope we should do it again sometime. I really hope you enjoy talking to Jared. I love that guy. I love hoppian.org. I'm gonna tell him when he gets off. I want him on my show. I've been asking him for months.
I'll let him.
He responded
to
me. He said he was going to come on. He never got back to me. Come on, man.
I'll let him know, dude. So we'll talk soon, Loyalist. I'll put all your links and thanks for coming on, dude.
Thanks for having me.
All right, everyone. I'll be back in 4 minutes. I'll see you soon. Peace.